Change your mindset.
14 minutes after 10 o'clock, and Dr. Johan Kutsia joins me now online as we talk about how to be adaptable financially for retirement in this modern world. Dr. Kutsia, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Hi, Aubrey. Nice to speak to you again.
Now, of course, you are the author of the book Screw Retirement. That was the conversation we had in the last time that you were with me. And I suppose it's a continuation of that conversation, Doc, around how do we become adaptable financially in anticipation of retirement in today's world. Where do we start with this conversation, Doc?
Well, I would suggest we start with the word change. Because our needs, our financial needs is constantly changing because of our lifestyle that's constantly changing. So if we want to be adaptable, we need to be able to hook onto the real truth of our lives, which is everything is changing all the time.
Everything is changing all the time. I started off the show this evening by observing that, you know, there are certain things that are happening in our lives at the moment that we like and some we don't like, but all of them are here. We need to find a way of being adaptable. So it's actually quite interesting that you and I are going to be talking about being adaptability as a means by which we can ensure a more certain, I suppose, if that is possible to say, more certain financial life, particularly at retirement. So talk to me about change and the fact that change is here to stay. And how do we have the mindset that creates, I suppose, the resilience in an ever-changing world?
The challenge that we have with a topic like this is that we would like to simplify it as far as possible. But the moment we talk about real change, real life, what is really happening in this country at this stage, it is not simple. The stats at this stage says, I think Sanlam indicated 2-3 weeks ago that 1.02% of all people will be able to spend their retirements financially free until the day that they die. 1.2% of 1.02%, something like that. Currently, our population rate is growing by 1.8%. And our economy grows at less than 1%. We look at the diminishing power of the buying power of the middle class. There's a huge gap between the poor and the rich, and these all just build up to a crazy situation where we need to understand that the people in the middle is going to battle and suffer more and more. Mm. So if we get to the question of how are we going to attend to being adaptable financially, I think we need to start by asking ourselves, how are we going to be adaptable as a person during this change that we are experiencing? So, as part of the workshop that I'm presenting on school requirement, I built a timeline where I indicated a number of things that needs to happen before. 5 to 10 years before you get to retirement, actual retirement, the day, early retirement, and then later retirement until such a time that we are not on this planet anymore.
So before, during, and after.
Before, during, and after.
Yeah.
And remember, my initial approach to this whole thing was that I'm actually looking at the issue of the psychological aspects of the change. But the more I spoke about the book and people engaged with me, the more I understood that there is a critical issue with regards to finances as well. So I'm not a financial advisor, but I do understand what the implications thereof is. The challenge that we have is that if, and I'm now reverting to the financial side of life, if we do not have the luxury of saving money, and a lot of people don't have that luxury, if we do have an income that's adequate to maintain a reasonable lifestyle, your ability to save enough money for a peaceful, relaxing retirement is still very, very limited. And then we get to the point where we would say there are a few categories of people in terms of retirement finances. The one is the 1.02% people that will be able to have fun and enjoy and travel and do whatever they would like to do until the day that they die. Then there will be a category of people that will most probably be able to do some of that, but they will still have to generate an income. And then there's people that will just continue battling, making plans, trying to generate income until the day that they die. And I know people do find it offensive that I speak so directly about until the day that you die, but that's what it is. It's until the day that you die.
Explain that to me. Why would people feel offended by the fact that you're talking about until the day that you die?
I'm
wanting to know, Doc, because I don't want to repeat it, and you know. But I'm certain that, you know, one day I'll die, right? So, you know,
obviously.
I might as well prepare as effectively for that day as possible, right?
Yeah. So I think that's the approach that I have. I don't like to sugarcoat things.
Sure.
And I think that where people don't like a lot of people don't like that. I get straight to the point. I say, listen, you are now 60. If you're lucky, you have 10 to 15 good years left.
Yeah.
Which means if you do not have adequate money, you will have to work that additional 10 to 15 years. And then you'll have to make a plan. So either you will have to save up, buy something to look after yourself post 75 for that matter, or your children will have to do so. And it's like they don't want to hear this.
Okay.
This sort of thing.
All right. 011-883-0702 is the number to dial. We're going to be talking about mindsets that we need to adopt in order for us to be as secure as possible in the phase of our lives that is followed by our death. All right. Please understand as we have this conversation that it is really not one that is trying to scare you or be negative in any way, but it really is based on the idea that these are certain life inevitabilities. We will one day die. And the idea is to have a conversation that is frank, that is open about the fact that there may be certain things we need to do to secure, at least try to secure, a better financial reality prior to the moment of our demise. It is not meant to offend. It is not meant in any way to alarm, but really to try and have a very sober look at where we are now, what we can do now, to make that phase of our lives as comfortably as possible, as comfortable as possible, financially speaking. I think that sort of sets the tone, Doc.
Agree. I'm happy with that.
Let's go. Let's go. Yeah.
Just an interesting thing in terms of preparation for retirement is the latest figure says that in the 2000s, but 30 years apart previously, the life expectancy for males was 62. Currently, the life expectancy is 87. And for females, it was 69, and it's now 94. So we have to save an additional 20 years worth of money.
So with all of the great exercising and good eating and you know, meditating, whatever it is that you do to enhance the quality of your life.
Your longevity
is being extended, but is your money being extended is the question I suppose you're asking.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So there's an extra 20 years that we might have to live, yeah?
It's an extra 20 years. So yes, sir.
Yeah, so we must find the money.
You have to find the money. So here's the interesting thing. A friend of mine is a financial broker, and he tells a story that a couple of weeks ago, somebody walked into his office. You can see it's a man. He could see that it's a man, a working class man, blue overall, et cetera, et cetera. And he asked him, he said, I'm 62 years old and I did not make enough provision. What should I do? And the only advice that could have been given was, you should take care of your health. You're going to work till the day that you die.
Sure.
And that's the reality of this whole thing.
So what do we do? Let's talk about our minds first, Doc, as we prepare ourselves for whatever the answer is for the question that we ask for our unique set of circumstances, right? So this guy was 62, and the reality for him was that he would have to work until he dies if he wants to maintain a particular lifestyle. But I imagine that the answer is not true for somebody who's 25. It's not the same, for somebody who's 25 and somebody who's 45. The answers would be different. But I imagine that there needs to be a particular mindset that we need to adopt in order to be in the best position at the phase of life that we are to get the best deal, I suppose, is the question I'm asking.
I think the word that that we are looking for in Afrikaans, it's sparsamer. I believe it's prudent in English.
Right, prudence, yeah.
It's we have to adopt a way of living where we can save. Now I know most people say they can't, and I agree, and I think the place in our lives where money is scarce. But you must understand if you do not save, you're going to run into trouble somewhere down the line. But having said that, the earlier you start to save, the better. Mm. Obviously, you will accumulate wealth, you will get all the insurances and stuff like that. And the earlier you start, the less expensive it is. And if you're lucky and you manage it properly, you will be able to retire free. However, I know of a number of people, and myself included, is that your plans does not work a lot of the time.
Mm.
You plan to build this business, you plan to save a lot of money, or you did save a lot of money, and suddenly at age 55 or age 60, you plan to work till 65 or 70, your business falls over, the sickness in the family,
life happens.
And yeah. I think that's the baseline of financial adaptability as well as psychological adaptability. Life happens. And if you understand that life happens, you will also understand that if life happens, a lot of changes happens. And if changes happen, you need to adapt. So one of the things that I find that I'm researching now to update the workshop with is how do you budget, for that matter, to be able to live within your means. And the thing that I came up with at this stage, and I don't think it's rocket science, but here's the thing. There's certain things that you really need, and that's irrespective of where you are in your life. Stuff that you need. You need to pay your municipal. You need to have a place to live. You need to pay rent. You need to have a car. That's needs.
Yeah.
And that you need to budget for in, let's say, one column. Then there are wants. I want to go and have lunch with my friends once a week. I want to travel. I want to this. I want to that. That's a different set of figures that you need to calculate.
So you've got to separate your needs from your wants, okay? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the third one is you need to identify, and I call that, I really want to do this the bucket list type of thing. So I would like to go to America and explore the one of those canyons, or I would like to go on a Europe trip for 2 or 3 months or something like that. That bucket list type of thing. That's three different sets of numbers. And you need to understand that while you're working and you're generating incomes, let's say you get a fixed salary, the first amount goes into the need one. If there's anything left, you go to the wants. And if there's anything left after that, you can put it into a place where you can save for that trip, whatever you would like to do in the future. And what happens is for example, when you're young or younger, say pre-retirement, you will save a lot of, in terms of your needs, your insurances, your policies, your annuities, and all those type of things will be part of the needs. So it absorbs all your money. When you go post-retirement, that money becomes your income. Yeah. And then you need to do the same calculation. And that means that you have the ability to work clearly from one set of numbers to the other, and you know exactly where you are. Now people will say, okay, yeah, that's fine. I can do that. The question is not if you can do it once. You need to do it continuously.
Yeah.
You need to know exactly where you are with your numbers, and you need to change them as you grow older, because your needs for children goes up to the point where they get married, and then that numbers fall away, but then your insurance for medical becomes higher, your home most probably will be paid off, so you don't pay that anymore, but you now still need levies. So those numbers move around all the time. So your ability to survive, to merely survive, depends on your ability to adapt and budget. And that's the issue.
Interestingly, in the first hour of the show, we had a conversation with Dr. Magwegwe and a guest. And what came out of that conversation, and interestingly, it's coming out again, that gone are the days where we are going to live unconsciously. In other words, where we just live. We've got to be a lot more conscious about every single aspect of our daily lives. And this was, of course, in light of the fact that today is Workers' Day, and that workers need to start being a little more conscious about how they spend their time in the workplace, and what it is that they're getting for the time spent in the workplace, and how they use the money that they get as a result of the time that they spend in the workplace, in order to anticipate some of the realities of life that are coming inevitably. And I imagine one of the things that you're saying, Doc, is that one of those inevitabilities of life is death. It's coming. It's old age if you are lucky enough to live long enough.
It's expensive.
Yeah, it's the realities of life, an accident, sickness, or whatever the case may be. So you're saying that in all of these realities, you need to have some sort of a plan that anticipates the possibility of something of that nature.
Exactly. But here's something that I would like to add. I believe that it's not possible anymore for the normal group of people, the middle part of the normal distribution, to just work and go home and earn a salary and think they can save a bit. If we look at this of the number that only 1.02% people can retire financially free, it means that the larger part of the population will have to generate income into the future. And that's why adaptability comes into play. So you need to, at an early stage already, start a second business, a sideline, something that will generate income. It can be a hobby. I had a conversation with a friend of mine, who is working in Keetmanshoop in the south of Namibia. And he said, how is it possible that my hobby can become my passion? And he's now, that's what he's doing. So I said, you're very lucky, because a lot of people don't have that opportunity to move from a hobby to a passion to a steady income from sorts. And we have to, as individuals, understand that if we are not in place with savings, we have to build a second stream of income. And you cannot wait till the day that you retire. It is not possible. It takes you a number of years to build a business.
So I'm hearing you to be saying, Doc, that if you know that perhaps you haven't made enough provision to be part of that 1% that generally retires, that retires and is financially stable by the time they reach their pension years, right? You're saying that means that you're going to have to find another stream of income.
Exactly.
You're saying that categorically. You're saying, listen, but if you haven't done enough in your younger years to provide for yourself in your pension age, then understand that you are going to have to have another stream of income. And you're suggesting that is going to be a business?
Well, I just want to add quickly, it all become dependent on somebody else. So you either have to generate income, or you'll become dependent on somebody else.
Yeah.
So the question is it going to be a business? So my question is, a business is there for generating income. And if you've got something, even if you are selling stamps, I don't care, whatever. If you're selling stamps, the point will be that you must make profit. If you are baking cook sisters for the church and you're making an income of it, you'll have to do the numbers. You'll have to work out what are you spending, what are your electricity, etc. So that you can come to a point that cooks that cost me 1.50 rand, so I'll have to charge 3 rand, and then I'm making a buck, and I can put that back into the house, and I can use 50 cent to buy the millimeter or whatever you're using, and the 1 rand can go towards the house. So it becomes a business in the end of the day. You can call it what you want, but in the end, it becomes a business.
Or you're going to have to find employment.
Well, yes, it's true. You'll have to find employment. But the challenge is, if you want to find the employment and you're post 60, who is going to hire you for doing what?
No, it's true. I mean,
you've got a challenge.
Yeah.
You've got a challenge.
Yeah. So either you're going to live off of somebody, maybe a spouse or children or whatever the case may be, or you're going to have to find employment, or you're going to have to start some sort of business. And what is the percentage of people who are going to find themselves in that reality in terms of your studies, Doc?
In terms of percentages, I don't know. I haven't. Got to a point where I can say 30% or 40% or 50%. It seems like that number is not available specifically. I'm digging through Stats SA and stuff like that to see if I can get something, and I'm not getting it at this stage. So if somebody knows about those numbers, please forward them to me.
Yeah,
I would love to use them. But I think that the point with a business is also the following: if you need to generate little income, more income, or no income, the fact that you have something going gives you purpose.
From a psychological point of view.
From a psychological point of view. So you now not, you, first you've got an identity, your identity shifts. You now got a purpose. You are looking after yourself. Your self-confidence is coming back where it's supposed to be. So you are now not dependent on somebody else. So your quality of life is better than it was, than it would have been previously. So the thing about generating a second income is not only about the money. It's also about you having a purpose, looking after yourself, sustaining yourself, and what goes with that. So you have to look at both sides of the coin.
Yeah. So beyond the practicalities of having an income, beyond the practicalities of having some sort of an augmentation of whatever pension you might have, you're saying that during that time where you are dealing with the realities of perhaps retirement, you also need the psychological resilience, psychological purpose, or let me say the psychological resilience that comes from having purpose. And therefore, yeah, it makes sense then to be part of some sort of vocation, some sort of a business, something that you're doing at that time, because that is what provides you with purpose and that is what provides you with the resilience you need, yeah?
Exactly. So if you look at the Japanese concept of ikigai, and I use that in my book, in the chapter that says define your true north, defining your purpose for that matter. The concept asked four questions. And that's questions that we need to ask ourselves in every stage of our lives. The first question is, what do you love to do? The second, what are you good at? The third question is, does the world need this? And the world now starts with you, your immediate family, the church, the suburb, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Does the world need this? And then the last question is, will they be able to pay you for whatever you intend to do? And you work with that. So you get to a point early in your life where I let's take the example of my friend. He's in the business of renewable energy. He started it off as a hobby, and it's now a business, and profitable business.
Yeah.
There's the story about a gentleman in America who, when he did his grade 12 in our terminology, he realized that most of his friends and family is going to varsities and technical. And he said, if everyone is going that way, I am going to go the other way.
Mm.
And he went through this process and he said, okay, now the bottom line is, what is it, what he loves, and what is it that he does good at? And then he realized that he loves cleaning. And most people don't like cleaning.
Yeah.
And what he said, he was okay with cleaning, but in the end, he got so good at it that it became his passion.
So you've got to look for, what are you good at? What do you like to do in order for that to be your possible plan B?
Exactly.
But you're also saying, Prof, if I'm understanding you clearly, that it's got to be viable.
It must be viable.
Because, you know, I mean, you were speaking about, you know, selling stamps. Oh, Doc, I don't know how viable that would be in today's world.
Not now.
Because you might love it and all, and you might even be good at it, or were good at it at some point. Exactly. But it might not necessarily be a very viable thing to do in terms of generating some sort of an income, yeah?
But it can be that if you love stamps and you love the selling of it, yeah, you can start and afslag, what's it in English?
An auction. Yeah.
So you can make money off other people's stamps.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have to sell your own. So there are numerous ways of looking at it. That's one of the critical areas of being adaptable is to be flexible in your thinking, to get to a point where you say, I'm curious, I'm wondering how it's going to work. I'm going to learn new skills. I know things need to change. I'm going to be proactive in this time. So there's so many things in the adaptability that you need to be able to have a prosperous and good, if I can say that, third life. Remember, my theory is first, second, third life. First life is school and all those things. Second life is where you work. Third life is now, let's say, pension plus. And the interesting thing about those, that is you work yourself to death in your second life to accumulate things. And then you work yourself to death in your third life to get rid of it. So if you think about it, why are you working so hard to accumulating things? Why are you not saving more?
Yo, give us a call, 011-883-0702. Yeah. Have you stopped to think about the reality of your mortality? That perhaps the day of your demise is coming. But before that happens, there's going to be a phase of your life where you're going to perhaps not be employed because maybe you are of a particular age, and you know the laws of this country suggest that you must be retired at a certain point in time. Have you made enough provision for that time? Do you have a purpose in that time? And according to statistics, less than 2% of South African population have done what it takes for them to continue their standard of life in their retirement age. When do you retire? Have you made enough provision? And if you haven't made enough provision, Dr. Kutsia says that you've got two options, maybe three. One is that you are going to have to depend on somebody, either a spouse or your children, to look after you. And for many people, that might not be tenable. Maybe that might not even be possible because your children might have their own responsibilities with their children and their responsibilities. Yeah. And I know, Dr. Kutsia, that many of us grew up under that thing. I mean, the natural progression of life was that, you know, I'm going to grow old and my children must look after me. But I suppose things aren't that way anymore. Things have changed, right? But secondly, there is another option where you might find employment. Thirdly, you may start a business. And all of that requires some sort of preparation. How much preparation have you done for any of those eventualities? That's the question. The reality, folks, is that that time is coming. And Dr. Kutsia was saying that, you know, some people get a little bit offended by this conversation because I suppose it does get a bit uncomfortable to talk about the fact that there may be a time when I'm dependent on other people. I'm not as effective. I'm not as, you know. But it's, have you been thinking about it? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. The number to dial is 011-883-0702. I want to read you some of the messages coming through as we talk. Ponti Moletane says, Brobs, please ask Prof if one had to retire at 2024, how much bank balance should they have in order to live a comfortable middle class life, says Ponti. I suppose, Doc, that the issue of a comfortable middle class life is a very big ask. It's a big question. It's probably very, very relative, yeah?
It is. So yes, this is exactly the point that I'm fighting with. And the benefit of this is I am going through this myself as well. So this is not theory. So the first question is what is your definition of a middle class life? First thing. The second thing is, did you create a budget that says 20 or 30 or 40,000 rand a month to maintain my lifestyle at this stage? The interesting thing is, and this is now dangerous ground for me, the interesting thing is that if you've got 1 million rand in the bank today, you will get about 4,000 to 5,000 rand worth of income a month for every million. So if you want 20 million, you need 4 or 5. If you want 30, so you go up.
Wait a second, Prof. What did you just say now? For every million, I get 4,000 rand a month?
If you invest your millions, and that is my understanding of it, that's why I'm saying I am not a financial advisor. Make a note on that. But my understanding is if you generalize numbers, and you say, I've got a million invested that will pay me an amount. Let's make it 5,000 rand a month. There are people that say you can get 8,000. There are some that says 4,000. I don't have this in writing because nobody wants to give this to me in writing.
Sure.
But let's say you get 5. Let's say you get 8 for every million. So you need 2 million to have 16. You need 3 to get 24. You need 4 to get... You get what I'm saying? So you need millions.
Many millions to make, I suppose...
So what's your budget?
So you've got to then define for yourself what it is that you call an affordable middle-class life. Ponty, I've just come to realize this. Ponty is a former colleague of mine that's just written that. How's it, Ponty? Anyway, but you're saying part of the project and part of the work that we need to do is we need to define very clearly as to what it is that we call an affordable middle-class life or the kind of life we want to live at retirement age.
Exactly.
How do we do that?
So now you get to do certain things. You go to your bank statement and you have a very critical look at it. So when last did you go to the gym? But you're still paying your 400, 500, 600 rand a month.
Yeah.
When last do you really need to be on that contract? Do you really need DStv? Do you need? And so you can take off a lot of money every month that you don't need. Now, the next thing is, in my case, when I bought my current house, I bought it for the 3 children, the swimming pool. It's 4 bedrooms. It is, got the kitchen. My wife is doing catering, et cetera, et cetera. And now we get to a point where the income is not what it was when I was still generating a big income in the corporate environment.
Yeah.
So am I going to stick? Am I going to sell? Am I going smaller? The next question is, if I sell my house now for rand million, whatever, am I going to get a smaller place somewhere that's affordable?
And one that is commensurate with your lifestyle. So you might get a smaller place. You might get a smaller place. You might get an affordable place. But is it at the level of lifestyle that you're looking for?
Exactly. And now you get to your car. What are you driving now? Can you replace it? Do you need a Land Rover Discovery 5 or 6 or whatever? Or can you, are you able to come around with a, call it what you want? Whatever car you think will suit your purpose. You have to work through these things. And that is one of the tips that I get from all the people that I've spoken to is please try and get the day that you go onto pension, try and be as debt-free as possible. You should not carry debt into pension. How possible is that?
Doc, now I understand why.
It's not easy.
Now I understand why people don't like to have this conversation. Now I understand why people are offended by it, yeah?
That's unfortunately my job. To ask these questions, and I love asking these questions, where people get frustrated with me is the moment that I put the following in front of them, where I tell them that you, sir or ma'am, are accountable. It's your responsibility to fix this. Nobody else's. You'll have to scale down. You'll have to get rid of that BMW. You'll have to give up on this, that, and the following. It's not me, nobody else, it's you. You created it, you fix it.
Have you walked out of a meeting with a club, Doc?
Close to.
I can see how it can get dangerous, man. I can see. This person says, good evening, Braobs, young citizen here. He says, just shows that the world is led by greed, stupidity, and fear. Reality is the Almighty God has given us two promises, age and death. We need ethical leaders in every sphere of life, or else we will be statistics when the Almighty created us for purpose, says young citizen. I would argue, young citizen, that that ethical leader, at least as it pertains to this conversation, is you.
Yebo.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Is you. I mean, based on what Doc Kutsia is saying, is that ultimately the buck stops with that one leader who is either ethical or not, and that's you. Would that be correct?
Self-leadership.
Yeah?
Self-leadership currently in the world is an significant issue. People don't want to take responsibility for themselves. And that is one of the definitions of failure.
Yeah.
Man is not a failure until such a time that he starts blaming somebody else.
DeSanto says, evening, Orbs and your team. Interesting topic that you're having in this hour. Retirement is a subject that includes everybody. What advice does your guest or can your guest give to someone in their early 50s without a permanent income in order to save for retirement? Great show as always, says Dos Santos. How do you respond to Dos Santos, Doc?
If you in your early 50s and you don't have a continuous income, you will work like that for basically the rest of your life. Set yourself up for that.
Unless of course there's a lotto winner.
Exactly. I mean, there's always that pox somewhere that happens and life is good to you. But for most of us, life is difficult. Life is a challenge, and we have to face it. And the nice the Stoics. No, the guy that wrote the book, the Road Less Traveled,
yeah.
M. Scott Peck said, life is difficult, but the moment that you accept it and absorb it completely, it's not difficult anymore.
Yeah.
Because that's the baseline. So if you're in 50 and you know that your income is not going to be adequate and that you have to work, you need to accept that you will have to work for as long as you possibly can and set yourself up for it. Don't fight it. Adapt to it. And that's the thing about all the building blocks of adaptability as well. You need to be flexible. You need to develop problem-solving skills. You need to learn continuously. The question is, if you are in a business where currently AI is going to be a challenge, don't stay there. Set you up for something else. Learn. You find out what it is that you can do. So it's a challenge and sometimes people expect me to give them answers. I can't give you answers. I can ask you questions.
Yeah.
And every question I'm asking you is a question I'm asking myself. And hopefully out of the questions and the conversation, you get to a point where you will say, okay, cool. I've got it. I can do the following.
Doc, as we close, it appears to me that part of that responsible leadership, self-leadership, is asking those hard questions yourself. Asking of yourself those hard questions so that you can get cracking as soon as possible, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Doc, how do we get...
Yep.
Go ahead.
This question that I'm asking you, I'm asking myself as well.
Yeah, yeah. Doc, how do we get a hold of you and your book?
Book is available... on Bargain Books and exclusive. It's also available on my website, the www. Dr. Johan Kutsia, one word, Dossier Rosetta. You can buy it from there. I make more profit when you buy it there, so please go there. And my cell number, if you want to discuss this, or you want talks, or you want to workshop this thing, 083-445-0452.
And you're saying this is a business you started after retirement?
No. I was lucky enough that I've had this. I always had the coaching and counseling thing going while I was working in the corporate environment.
Yeah.
And in about the past 8 years, I guess, I ramped it up because I knew I'm not going to be one of those one percenters. So I ramped it up. This is what I'm doing. I'm living my passion. I'm writing. I'm reading. I'm teaching. I'm conversing.
Would you say that you're doing better now than you did when you were in your corporate space?
The answer is dual. One, in terms of finances, no.
Mm.
You make a lot more money in the corporate environments. But as a person, I am way more happy than I've ever been. I'm content.
Doc, it's been great talking to you, and thank you very much for joining us.